The readings this morning have a little history in them. They talk about mothers. And the first reading this morning comes from the book Revolutionizing Motherhood by Marguerite Guzman-Bouvard, written in 1994. And she's talking about a very famous group of mothers in Argentina who are celebrated in the cover of your Order of Celebration.
The Argentine mothers of the Plaza de Mayo appeared on the political scene in the aftermath of the military coup in 1976, which ushered in one of the most flagrant and brutal military dictatorships in recent times. Fueled by anger at the disappearance of their children and by an extraordinary courage, a group of middle-aged women belied the perception in a traditional patriarchal society that the aged and women in general are powerless. Against the military values of hierarchy, obedience, and the unchecked use of physical force, the mothers practiced pacifism, cooperation, and mutual love. They developed a political organization and style which contradicted that of a culture whose politics historically had been based on military intervention. Most of the mothers were housewives, and those who worked were employed in areas often reserved for women, such as primary school education, social work, and retail sales. Few received an education beyond high school, and a number had only completed primary school. Yet they were the only group that dared to confront a repressive military government. In defiance of a regime that operated in secrecy, they began to demonstrate it in Buenos Aires before the presidential palace in the Plaza de Mayo, which is the seat of power in the country, flanked by banks and the cathedral, as well as the palace. During the time of terror, however, the omnipresent security police made it dangerous for a group to gather there. The mothers first met in 1977. By the time a constitutional government replaced the junta in December, they had claimed the Plaza de Mayo as their sacred place. They transformed it so it not only reflected power and dissent, but also celebrated their collective version of maternity. Through their international reputation, the mothers have claimed the Plaza de Mayo as their world stage, confirming the universal significance of their search for justice.
And the second reading this morning is based upon my reflections during the week of what happened last Sunday evening late. And so this comes from Stephen Call's book called The Bin Ladens, which is a study of the family, a very, very, very large family. And the book is called The Bin Ladens, An Arabian Family in the American Century. Call puts Bin Laden in the context of that remarkable family and talks about Osama's mother.
Osama bin Laden's mother, Alia Ghanem, was about 15 at the time of his birth. Mohammed bin Laden divorced her soon afterward, probably before she was 18. The boy was her only child at the time. Naturally, they clung to each other during this period of change. Later, as a teenager, Osama would lie at her feet and caress her, said Khalid Batarfi, a neighbor and friend of Osama's. He wouldn't sleep if he knew she was upset about something. Alia was handed from one husband to another. Muhammad arranged for her to remarry a mid-level administrator who worked at his company. This was Muhammad al-Atas. By the account of Batarfi, who knew him well in later years, al-Atas was a gentleman, and he became a reliable husband and father. He and Alia eventually had four other children and incorporated Osama into a conventional Saudi household. Osama's place in this new suburban home was unusual. In one respect, he was the odd boy out, the only child of an absent father, a conspicuous stepbrother. Yet, as Mohammed bin Laden's male heir, Osama was the sole source of his new family's wealth and access to bin Laden family privileges. The emotional complexity of his position as a young boy who was both excluded and essential, marginalized and powerful, can be readily imagined. Alia remembered Osama as a shy kid, very nice, very considerate. He has always been helpful. I tried to instill in him the love of God, the respect and love for his family, neighbors, and teachers. All the available testimony about Osama's early childhood emphasizes his shyness and placidity. He preferred to be alone, was not particularly social with his cousins, and had trouble communicating at times. Still, he was not a cause of trouble, and he did not shutter himself inside, by their account. They recalled that he particularly enjoyed swimming, hunting, and horseback riding.
Not long after the second service is over with, I'm going to leave for a couple of days and go up to Michigan to see my mother. I'm going to see her, and I'm also going to spell my sister a bit because she has such a mantle of responsibility on her shoulders. She's the one geographically closest to my mother. Many of you ask about my mother in her nursing home, and that is a great kindness, and I thank you. She is doing a bit better now, but as many of you know, I was never sure during December, January, or February what the next phone call would bring, and I jumped every time the phone rang. But though she still cannot walk, and will be in a nursing home until her last day, she is indeed doing much better. And I love it when I can speak with her and laugh with her. Whenever I talk with her, I get a little tight in my throat. I realize what a tremendous gift it's been in the last year or so since my father died, to get to know my mother in this entirely different way. having faced some very difficult issues from her teen years for the very first time at this late age, she has found a new freedom to be who she always was, but never felt quite able to show before now, at age 86. My gratefulness for this time never ebbs at any time of the day. I am a very lucky man right now. Sometimes people tell me, some of you have told me this, but others have too, that the big holidays, like Christmas, for example, can be difficult times for them. Some congregations that I know about even celebrate in December something they call Blue Christmas, to honor and name the emotional lows associated with that holiday for some. But over the years, I've come to understand that not everyone feels comfortable on this May Day either. And not just because, as many also complain, it's a hyped up day, sentimentalized by card companies and florists and even the restaurant industry now and then. I know, for example, that today is a bit tough on those who wanted to have children but couldn't, or who chose not to have children and never received any comprehension from those around them. And I know it's a strange day for those mothers who lacked what many would call a maternal instinct, and for those whose mothers suffered from some brokenness of head or heart or addiction. But perhaps especially because I have come to see my own mother blossom in these late months of her life, this is a precious day for me, a very precious day. And I've come to think that it's not a bad thing at all to hold up motherhood and indeed parenthood itself in high esteem and honor, despite the brokenness of some representatives. Now, history tells me that this has not always been the case, the uplifting of motherhood, for example. I decided this week, after Osama bin Laden was killed, to read about his life a bit and to find out more about him than the singular horror he is most famous for. I did this because it suddenly occurred to me that even people like him, who claimed the responsibility for the deaths of so many, also had a mother. A mother, by the way, who is still alive, living in a small coastal town in Syria, and who, unlike so many did in this country, probably did not jump up and down for joy when her son was killed, or say that her son's death and universal justice were identical. I think it's fair to imagine that as a mother, she remembered not the tall, bearded man known to the world as a terrorist, but more the shy boy who used to come in and massage her feet, as our second reading reported. Osama was apparently close enough to her, even in later years, to have called her on the phone the day before the towers fell, telling her he would be out of communication with her for a while. But in the bin Laden family as a whole, Alia's position, his mother's position, was a strange one. Coming out of a Syrian family that seems to have been associated with a rather unusual, even liberal form of Islam, she was far more cosmopolitan in her outlook than the other three wives of Osama's father, the patriarch of the bin Laden family. She refused to cover her face, for example, and she enjoyed shopping trips to Damascus for fashionable clothes. She was divorced by her husband around age 18, less than 3 years after her marriage ceremony. While married to him, she was never respected by the other wives of her husband, who often ridiculed her as the slave because she was so enslaved or entranced by Western values. Osama, as he grew up, was often ridiculed as the son of the slave. Alia was not regarded highly after her divorce, although she married another Syrian, and together they had several other children, half-siblings to Osama, who, as the second reading makes plain, was in a rather odd situation, especially after his emotionally distant father died in a plane crash before he was a teenager, I think at age 11. He was now an heir of part of the great family fortune. Steve Call puts it very elegantly. The emotional complexity of his position as a young boy who was both excluded and essential, marginalized and powerful, can be readily imagined. Indeed. In college, Osama, having been raised by a mother marginalized by the entire bin Laden family, found that he wanted to be associated with those who did have respect. And these were largely the strongly religious men, like his gym teacher, who told him and his friends dramatic story after dramatic story around the campfire of young men going so far as to even kill their own parents for not being sufficiently devout in religious practice. The kindness and cosmopolitan approach taught by his marginalized mother and her more liberal interpretations of the Quran didn't claim as strong a hold on him as the exciting campfire stories of violence and devotion told by his highly respected and engaging gym teacher. And please, if any of you are thinking that this is some sort of religious issue, you've missed the point. In a modern secular world, saturated with hundreds and hundreds of vivid, realistic video games, major motion pictures, and television programs which excite and extol violence and blind devotion, the values that called to Osama bin Laden call also to many in our country and in many countries around the world as well. Not that devotion is terrible. Fanatical devotion is terrible. But the devotion of the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo is remarkable. All wearing white kerchiefs on their head, some people would call them babushkas. None of them royally educated. They came together to form a community of devotion to their children. The violent government back then said that their children had simply disappeared. A blasphemous falsehood, if ever there was one. As part of a campaign of state terrorism, they were kidnapped, these children, and adopted out into military families, or imprisoned without due process, or simply killed for their political views that didn't coincide with the government's. The mothers of the Plaza de Mayo, says author Marguerite Guzman Bouvard, transformed that square, that center of state power, so it not only reflected power and dissent, but also celebrated their collective version of maternity. mothers who had recognized that singly they could not face the dangers of the government police, and who, if they did so, might disappear themselves, but who, by forming a public community of motherly devotion, could approach the threshold of real justice, which they insisted meant either their children being returned to them alive or their murderers brought to legal justice. Every Thursday, they would march for hours in their kerchiefs, some of them barely able to walk for their age. But together they made their demands, they presented their demands, and after a while, they began to be supported by communities even outside Argentina. And more pressures were placed on the Argentine junta until finally constitutional order was reestablished. And still, they did not go away, the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. Justice work, after all, is never finished, is it? This is very important work. All of these mothers standing up for their children, not letting their fears or their worries, understandable fears and worries, hold them back. What difference, I wonder, would it have made in Osama's life if the other women married to her husband had not mocked her as a slave, but joined with her and championed her before her husband, formed a motherly community of devotion, since they all had children? What if they had demanded respect for Alia and her son, not mere expediency and indifference? This is a common story even in this country. I think of mothers against drunk driving, for example, which I, though I'm not a mother, was part of for many, many years after my friend Stuart was standing on the street corner in San Francisco just waiting for a light to change and was hit and killed by a car driven by a man who had been tried 14 times for drunk driving. My own mother, in her nursing home up in suburban Detroit, tells me interesting things that reflect on this. She wishes that she herself could be part of something so powerful as a community of mothers. Over Christmas this year, and I've told some of you this story privately in more full detail, but over Christmas this year, she told me that she was sorry that she had never joined that group consisting of mothers and fathers and friends, parents and friends of lesbians and gays, PFLAG, which meets at this congregation the last Sunday of the month. After all, she said to me, I wish I had done it, but I didn't do that, and I'm sorry. I am your mother, after all, she said to me, and you are my son. And my job, as I see it, is to walk by your side and to hold your hand and to share my strength with you as you walk your journey through life, to be there for you when you stumble and to suffer by your side when you suffer. You can be sure that no matter how tough Christmas is for some, or how difficult Mother's Day might be for others, personally, I've already celebrated both of them with joy long ago. And when I go up to Detroit this afternoon, it will be just be a continuation of those holidays celebrated such a long time ago.